We're going to start this week's show by taking you on a long journey. It's a journey that has a pretty noble goal at the end, a future where a fast-growing state is able to power itself without burning as many fossil fuels. It's a journey that starts a long way from here, up in frigid Quebec, where a gigantic decades-old project that dammed rivers and forced native people off their lands has become a source of provincial pride and a lot of power. How much power? Well, Hannah McCarthy and Sam Evans-Brown from the podcast Outside In, they told us when they went there for their series, Powerline.
This is the sound of standing underneath a turbine inside the Centrale Robert-Bourassa, a massive dam complex that is way up in the middle of Quebec.
This facility is one of the biggest in the world. Together, its two powerhouses have 22 of these turbines, and they put out more power than 6 nuclear reactors.
So if one of these can power a city, then how much does the whole facility, you said it's...
Oh, that way, this is the equivalent of a town of close to 1.6 million people.
Power-hungry Massachusetts saw Hydro-Quebec's big dams as a zero-carbon answer to their prayers.
We believe through the solicitation and procurement of long-term contracts for both hydropower and offshore wind power, Massachusetts and New England can remain a national leader in clean and renewable energy production.
That's Governor Charlie Baker, who solicited bids for all kinds of projects to bring about 1,200 megawatts of renewable energy to the Commonwealth. In January of 2018, Massachusetts announced that it picked the Northern Pass Transmission Line, a project of giant utility Eversource, to deliver a big chunk of that power in through New Hampshire. Northern Pass was controversial, though, from the start. And only a week after Massachusetts' announcement, New Hampshire's Site Evaluation Committee denied the final permit for the project. The state's governor, Chris Sununu, was not happy, as he told radio station WTSN.
And when you look at what the factors were that they considered in taking that vote, they just couldn't be more wrong. They couldn't be more wrong. I mean, this was clearly a pre-staged decision, I think.
So Massachusetts went to Plan B, a different transmission line from Quebec, this one cutting through the state of Maine. Central Maine Power's New England Energy Connect. Now, a year later, this project, while also controversial, is getting more and more support, including from Maine's new governor, Janet Mills.
The transmission line project, substantially enhanced by this stipulation, now is poised to benefit Maine people, to inject millions into our economy, to create jobs, to fund electric vehicles, to reduce electricity costs, to expand broadband, and substantially reduce our carbon footprint.
So what about these two projects led to such different outcomes? And what does it mean for the energy mix for our entire region? We called up two reporters who've been covering these issues very closely, New Hampshire Public Radio's Annie Ropeek and Maine Public Radio's Fred Bever. Annie started by describing the Northern Pass project.
This is a 192-mile transmission line. You know, those are the tall towers, the kind of the biggest scale power line that you see. It would have been partly buried, gone down through the White Mountains of New Hampshire from Canada, and then emerged into central New Hampshire, where the power would have been distributed down into southern New England. It had a price tag of $1.6 billion. And I should note that the Northern Pass project also predated that Massachusetts state law as well. So that was just sort of a bonus for them, is they had that new funding opportunity that if, you know, this project that was already in the works got picked by Massachusetts, it would help them recoup some of its costs more quickly. And all they had to do was get their final building permit from the state of New Hampshire.
So you've got this huge utility that wants to sell power to Massachusetts residents. You've got the support of Massachusetts state government. But then it fell through. What happened?
Yeah, so it was quite dramatic. I mean, the Massachusetts decision where they picked Northern Pass came out. I was looking back at my old stories. It feels like a long time ago. January 25th, and then by, I think, February 1st, the State Site Evaluation Committee, which is this board of different state departments and, you know, representatives of different stakeholder groups who is in charge of approving big energy projects, they denied Northern Pass on around February 1st. And they'd only been in deliberations for a few days. And again, this came after literally years of hearings leading up to these deliberations. They had scheduled a few weeks of deliberations. So it was a huge surprise when on, I think, day 3, they said, we don't believe this project can pass muster. We're ready to vote it down right now. And they did. And so basically the site evaluation committee has some criteria that are laid out in our state law that they are judging all of these projects against, whether it's, you know, a relatively small solar project that just makes the cut of being considered large scale or something really enormous and transformative like Northern Pass. The projects have to be financially sound. They had agreed that Northern Pass was. And then they have to meet these other sort of tests of their impact. So they can't have too big of an effect on the environment or tourism or aesthetics along their route. They must be found to be in the service of the public good, which is this kind of subjective criterion. And then the last one is that they cannot upset orderly development in the region. And that was the one ultimately that sunk Northern Pass. That was the one that site evaluators decided that there was no way that they were going to find that the project could meet that test. And so they didn't even talk about the other two. And they voted unanimously to reject the project, which has now set off this ongoing appeals process that we're still in the middle of right now.
So we'll get back to Northern Pass in a moment. But Fred, I'll turn to you. Once Northern Pass falls apart, this is an opportunity for the CMP project that would go through Maine to be resuscitated. So tell us about that. What was the process by which Massachusetts decided to go with CMP as Plan B?
Well, so Massachusetts basically took a new look at all of the bids it had, and one and done was clearly something that the Massachusetts regulators were interested in, and Massachusetts Governor Charlie Baker. And CMP was that kind of project, and it was about $600 million cheaper for Massachusetts than the Northern Pass project. So cost, I think, was the big deal. CMP had been laying the groundwork for getting its permits. It was pretty canny about that. It's done this kind of project before, and it's, unlike the other bidders, really transmission-focused.
So the big factor, cost. Obviously, they'd done some of the groundwork in advance, something that maybe Northern Pass hadn't done. Maybe you can describe, though, the project itself, Fred. If Northern Pass was going to cut through the White Mountains and other sensitive environmental areas, and that's one of the concerns people had, what does it look like coming through Maine?
So it's the entire corridor is about 141 miles from the Canadian border down to Lewiston, Maine, where there's a big interconnection into the regional grid. And most of that requires upgrades, taller towers, more robust lines for the high voltage DC current that would be coming from Canada into the regional grid. But the most controversial part is about 53 miles of new corridor going through forested territory in western Maine, in its mountains, across some of its rivers. And that's been where a lot of the controversy has focused, on whether the trade-off between cutting through the woods there is worth it compared to whatever Maine's going to get out of this project.
One of the problems that dogged Northern Pass, Fred, was that it didn't have some of the necessary permits in place, that it was still waiting for some of that. And as it got started, it led to perhaps its demise. What did Maine have already in place to allow this project to get started a little bit more quickly?
Well, one thing is that while it's still in the permitting process now and always needed certain permits, Central Maine Power had secured the entire corridor that it needed. Of course, it already had the existing parts of the corridor, but it had also secured either ownership or easements across a particular route. They had also started negotiating with various towns, which would get some property tax benefit out of the project, to get their support for the project from their local governments. And in addition, none of this is on public land. A good deal, and Annie, you can help me with this, a good deal of the Northern Pass project was actually on national forest land. So there isn't the same sort of public resource and public interaction that there was at Northern Pass.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, Northern Pass had to go through a number of really high-profile court battles to try to secure some of the land that they needed. So they had all their land lined up, but it hadn't been sort of automatically available to them. They had to negotiate with a lot of environmental groups, with the National Forest, to get some of the corridor that they needed. But the rest of it was an existing rights of way, and that's something they really pushed a lot, that, you know, we're not going to have to, like, blaze any new trails for this thing, but really, that was only because they, you know, had to sort of go through the motions of securing the corridor way ahead of time, which, you know, brought them, they felt, into a position where they were all ready to go. And it's interesting that the opposite was true for CMP, that they were sort of felt okay about their state approvals, but they still had some of those little details to be worked out, or not so small details, depending on who you ask. Whereas Northern Pass, one thing that got them in trouble is they may have treated that site evaluation committee approval not as a given, but as, you know, we've made it this far, we can make it over this hump. You know, we feel that the project meets all these tests of code, and all we have to do is talk through it, and that turned out not to be the case.
A key part of any project like this, if you're going to take a power line through one state, ostensibly to get power to customers in a completely different state, is the residents of that state, New Hampshire or Maine, probably have to get something out of it. So, Annie, I'll go to you first. What were New Hampshire residents told they'll get if Northern Pass cuts through the White Mountains and goes all the way down to Massachusetts?
So one thing they were told is that they were not going to have to foot the bill for this alone, that, you know, we all share in the power here and we share in those costs. And New Hampshireites were not going to have to worry about paying to bring power to Massachusetts, in theory. There also were certain economic development funds that were going to be made available as part of the project. Eversource was calling one of those the Forward New Hampshire Fund, which was for $200 million. And a lot of that was going to support economic development in the sort of more depressed rural parts of our North Country around the White Mountains, some of those towns that have suffered from the closure of certain paper mills and forestry sectors and you know, that rely a lot on ski tourism and White Mountains revenues. And then they also were going to make some upgrades to utility infrastructure in the North Country to, again, help bring better service and economic opportunities to these towns. But, you know, there were not, in my view, and Fred, you can correct me here, but it doesn't seem like there were so many kind of really large-scale statewide initiative kind of incentives besides just like doling out millions of dollars in economic development funds. But CMP has quite a bit more of a range of incentives is my impression, and I think that's something that sets the two apart.
One important, really important difference between the incentives package that Northern Pass offered and Eversource offered versus what Central Maine Power is offering now is that Central Maine Power didn't offer a package at first. Nothing at all. Nothing above and beyond the project itself and the purported benefits that that would bring. So that was one reason that probably that CMP could make its offer to Massachusetts at $600 million less than Northern Pass was, because it didn't have to dole out benefits, at least in as far as the bid process was concerned. But they did early on make a guarantee that Mainers, businesses and residents would never be on the hook for any of the costs of building this new transmission line. In addition, it would enjoy the benefits of lower energy prices throughout New England because of this pulse of clean energy basically subsidized by Massachusetts residents. After then candidate for governor Janet Mills said, I'm not so sure about this project. This is during the campaign. I don't think I could support it as it is now. I really want them to bring some more to the table. Now, that's paraphrase, but that's the message she sent. So they did once she got elected. And that includes more than $100 million in rate assistance to hold the line on energy costs for Maine ratepayers specifically, maybe worth about $1.50 a month on your average residential bill. For the big businesses, though, that support this project, then the big energy users like paper mills, significantly more, one reason they've signed on. They're putting in some money for extra money for rate relief for low-income customers. They got $15 million for heat pumps, $15 million for electric vehicle charging stations. They've got money for to subsidize the purchase of electric vehicles, $5 million for economic developments in host communities. So there's this sort of banquet of efforts.
So then, Annie, what happens next with that project? As you say, it predates this request for power from Massachusetts, all of New England. These states are growing. They need more energy, and they're going to want more than maybe just 10% of their energy to be renewable or coming from hydro sources. Is there still life left in a Northern Pass project?
It really remains to be seen. You know, we're waiting to see what the Supreme Court does with it. They may issue kind of a narrow ruling that's really more about the SEC's process than about whether Northern Pass is a good project or not. I actually think that's somewhat likely. It's not really the Supreme Court's job to approve this project. They're looking more at whether this violated SEC rules or whether SEC rules need to be clarified in some way to prevent this kind of chaos in the future. But, you know, one potential outcome is that the Supreme Court says, yes, according to the letter of the Site Evaluation Committee law, you didn't do your due diligence and you need to do it again. You need to reconsider the project and do it in this correct way. And that could potentially lead to a different outcome for Northern Pass. Eversource is certainly acting as though Northern Pass still has life left in it. And in fact, when I talked shortly after Massachusetts dumped the project to former Eversource spokesman Martin Murray, you know, he was intimating that Massachusetts was not, you know, the only player in the game.
Massachusetts is a large player in this game, but it's one of six New England states. And what we're seeing is a growing demand and a recognition that this sort of energy is desired.
So I think that Eversource would like to develop Northern Pass, whether or not they have a obvious immediate single customer to buy the power like Massachusetts would have been. This is a capital project. I mean, Eversource can do this if they can get the approvals for it. They don't need a specific buyer. They can just sell the power straight into the regional grid and pass the costs on to ratepayers potentially, or, you know, do it through some other means. And so I think it'll be really interesting to see what comes out of the state Supreme Court. And I think Eversource is going to do all they can to try to revive this project in some way, although I think that there probably are not so many options for them to do that. But, you know, they're going to do what they can for sure, because they've invested millions of dollars into this campaign so far. And so they're not going to let it go easy.
I think they wouldn't mind if the CMP project here in Maine went away.
Oh, sure. Yeah. I mean, can you imagine if they switched back to Northern Pass?
I'd rather not. One thing I do want to mention in all of this, I've been talking about Central Maine Power. We're really talking about international energy giant Iberdrola, which in turn owns Avangrid, which in turn owns Central Maine Power. And so this is like one component of a big playing field for moving to a more renewable energy future. Iberdrola is mainly in the wind energy business in Spain. And so these big transmission projects, these are all part of what will be likely more demand for this kind of energy and for big transmission lines to do it. That's one reason why some environmental groups here in Maine are taking a very careful look at the environmental permitting process and trying to say, okay, this could be a precedent. I think that that's one important thing about watching this process in Maine, is to see what the environmental regulators come up with in terms of mitigation for the ecosystem values that will be lost if this project goes through 53 miles of what right now is contiguous forest land.
Fred Bever covers energy and the environment for Maine Public Radio. Annie Ropeek covers energy and the environment for New Hampshire Public Radio. And they both joined us today. Annie and Fred, thank you both so much for joining me. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you, John.